Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we are back for episode 28 of Digital Divination. How you doing, Ron? It's been a couple weeks here now.
Thank you for asking. I'm doing great. I am not writing anything. I sent off to my last two outstanding freelance assignments, and right this very minute, because I have a contract to sign that I have not yet signed, but right this very minute, I have no outstanding writing.
Yeah, I heard you're taking a step back, and then I read that you had a new thing, and I'm thinking, wait, this is contrary to that what you said. You're not doing stuff, but this is further out horizon, or what?
This is further on the horizon. It's a third party writing to do. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To be perfectly honest, my chicken coop is kind of falling apart, and I want to buy a fancier one. And the fancier one is more expensive, and I'm like, well, we can either try to find the money in the budget we have, or, okay, I'll just do a little more writing, and then I'll have the money to buy the fancier chicken coop.
You know what? I was just thinking of you. On Facebook Marketplace at Everett, somebody's selling a like-new chicken coop because it was wrong for the type of chickens he bought.
Really?
Yes. You need to look up at the Facebook Marketplace and look up chicken coops, because this is a good-looking – and I'm thinking, oh, no, there's no way he's going to buy this fancy chicken coop. I'm thinking it was like $450.
That's actually not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah. It was below the new retail price or whatever, and all set up. Anyway, I didn't mean to get talking into chickens.
No, but I wanted to go the other way. How are you doing? It's been a couple weeks.
It's been good. You know, we have a lot of interesting drama going at my normal full time job. I don't know if you've heard any of it.
Drama at your job?
Yeah, it's actually been in the local news here even.
I've not been paying enough attention to local news then.
Yeah, it could get even bigger. I teach at a Christian university, and you know, we're pretty liberal here in Seattle, and like the church I go to is an affirming church, which means, you know, we're open to LGBTQ and everybody, basically, you know, to be ordained, to be members, all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that the church that's affiliated with my university is not so affirming, and there's a lawsuit out there against the school. And the university, all our faculty and students have been petitioning the board of trustees to say, hey, we need to change what we do for hiring because we want to be inclusive. And they just last Monday said, no, ain't going to do it. So now, like literally today, the faculty is taking a big vote on stuff to do. And so it's like right now, I was waiting for you, I was in a faculty meeting where we're talking about, okay, depending on what happens here with this vote, we could do this, we could do this, we could. So there's a lot of drama going on. You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you think it's going to go? Too soon to tell, or what do you think?
I don't know. I was just shocked when the Board of Trustees refused to even have a dialogue on making any changes. I mean, I was just devastated with it. It just really, and a lot of people were, because again, you know, our faculty we really care about our students. We care about our colleagues. Mm-hmm. And to be not inclusive of anyone is something that is just so foreign to us. And for the board to just take such a hard stand on it, I guess it had never come up before, because I think for the most part, maybe, I don't know for sure, but maybe it was like a don't ask, don't tell kind of situation or something.
Right. Yeah. Oh, they're out on the left coast. We just let them be.
And, yeah. Whatever, you know. Yeah. And but we had somebody who was very much, you know, out as a gay man, and he'd been teaching as an adjunct. And so he applied for a full-time job and was told, no, you aren't eligible.
Wow.
And so it's like, what? I can teach here all these nursing students as much as anybody else, but if I want to have some longer-term security – that's against the rule. That's just not right. And so anyway, that's been driving a lot of us crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's like right in the middle of the term here now. So there's a lot of us other stuff going on. We're trying to get something going sooner, because if nothing happens during the summer, then, you know, I'm thinking, you know, the board is just hoping this thing all blows over. And it's like, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. There's already a big uproar amongst the students and faculty and staff about this. So
now they can't not do something about it, right? This isn't a blow over point. This is something must be affirmatively said one way or the other about it, or compromise reached.
Well, I don't know how you compromise this, honestly. I mean, I was in the service when there was a don't ask, don't tell policy. Mm-hmm. And that was before it opened up, right? And then closed again and opened up again. I don't know that we could go to that. I don't think you can say, oh yeah, we're going to pretend like, you know, there's no LGBTQ folks here, but we're not going to actively search them out, so we have to fire them. That just seems so disingenuous for, an academic institution to do.
Right,
you know?
Right. No, I was thinking something along the lines of a compromise with having some sort of more distant affiliation or some sort of subsidiary. It's like, okay, we understand that's what's going to be going on here, and we're going to keep it at arm's length from like the main body of the decision making. That's almost my preference for things like that, because that's a way that it can be established as an inclusive area, and then the inclusivity can spread, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's an issue with the Methodist Church, which went through this big hubbub last year where they split, right? Mm-hmm. And so until they did that split, we were fine, because there was kind of a mix of exactly what you're saying. But the part that is kind of overseeing our university is the part that said, no, we're splitting away because we don't want to have this inclusivity.
Oh, so I see.
It's already done that thing once, and we came out on the short end. So.
Right. Well, and it came out on the uninclusive end, and so now they're doing what they see as sort of a house cleaning of all those people who shouldn't be in their organization. Well,
our president was basically let go. I think he resigned, but now because he was working really pushing to have this inclusivity, that I think the board, I don't know for sure, I'm guessing the board told him he was no longer welcome, because you don't announce and leave within 4 days as the president of a university.
That's correct. That is correct. Yeah, anytime. And that's the case in the corporate world too. Anytime anybody would be leaving their position to pursue personal interests or something like that, you're like, oh, they just got asked to leave.
So, anyway, speaking of personal interests, I'm just going to talk about the elephant in the room, or the three kids running around like crazy outside your office. We're going to have background noise here, it sounds like, today, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, I think that is probably the case. And there's not three kids, there's five. So there's
five. Oh, okay.
Much more noise than you might think. There are a couple of neighbor kids that we want to help them out as much as we can. They had some, when everybody was doing remote learning, they had some internet connectivity issues at home. And so we sort of made the decision to include them as part of our bubble. It helps that they're, you know, really good friends with my kids, but we help them. I mean, their mom has been sort of in and out of the hospital recently, which is, we want to help how we can. And one of the ways we can help is have a good, consistent, safe place for the kids to hang out or sleep over if they have to, or just run around the yard. And that's what they're doing right now.
Well, it's not often we get these mid 70 days out here, and it's just gorgeous. So
yeah, it's nice. Although I've been here 3 years now, just over 3 years, and I know enough to not be fooled, right? It seems really nice. And you could say, oh, this is spring and spring is here and it's going to lead into summer. No, I think I've learned otherwise, that we're going to get some like kind of gross and raininess between here and actual summer.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My anniversary is actually the end of this month, and I remember we went out, you know, part of it, we went out to the San Juans and stuff, and it was just pouring rain. So, yeah, no matter how nice you think it's going to be, it'll take a turn for the worse. You really can't count on it until like the end of June to being consistently nice. So. Oh, everyone's going to know your kids' names at this point, perhaps. So I don't know.
Probably true. Is that coming in? Are they shouting names? I can't. I mean, I've got the mic is sticking out further than my headphones. So
yeah, there's a little bit there. So it's okay. It's okay. All right. So, you know, I was wondering what we should talk about today, given how nice the weather it is and the fact that I've been so busy with my deliverables and I hadn't really done anything to prepare. But what came to mind, and I mentioned it to you in our communication, is that, you know, in our last actual play, we were talking about moving forward to our new GM and having to change virtual tabletops.
Right. The GM we're going to have is not enamored with Roll20, which is what we've been using. And frankly seems kind of happy to use anything else. The big ones being Fantasy Grounds and Foundry are the other two big name virtual tabletops.
Yeah, and I actually found that interesting because when I had talked with him, he had mentioned he wanted to do it on Fantasy Grounds Unity, which is their new version that was in beta. Like last year when we are actually using it, we started using it
right
for this one. And what we found as players is that it was so challenging to pick up even how to do basic things after being gone for a while that you were like relearning the system each time. It wasn't very intuitive.
Right. Now, and not only was the interface not particularly intuitive, it's also a real resource hog. And so I was using a slightly older computer at the time. And my wife's laptop actually was fairly recent, but neither of us could run it effectively and fast. It was always really slow, laggy. It would take a long time to load, just because it was trying to pull so much resources in on the just to operate on kind of what I think is kind of a basic level. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess there were a couple other issues with Foundry. One was, you had to actually have the GM had to have the server up and running for the players to be able to go and access anything and do any updates of their characters.
Now, is that Foundry, not Fantasy Grounds?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was Fantasy Grounds. Foundry is actually the same way. But Fantasy Grounds is Unity is what we had as the GM. So when I was GMing, because I don't work for Paizo, I don't get all the Paizo references automatically loaded into my Fantasy Grounds saying I actually had to buy them all myself, and I did that.
Well, I had to ask for them. I don't get them automatically. Yeah. I have to ask somebody for them, but
But they all get in there though. And,
yeah, it's true. It's a perk of the job.
And for me to get everything basically so that everybody could run all the stuff they wanted from all the different references and stuff, that was hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Wow.
And I was willing to try it because I wanted to see it, only because I knew they had a 30-day, no questions asked, money-back guarantee. Mm-hmm. And so I figured, you know what? If I'm going to try this, I got to go whole hog to make sure that there's no limits based on just a budgetary thing. And so I did. You know, I bought all the AP books, all the hardcovers, anything that was – actually had to buy other AP books because some of our players had feats and skills from other books. So I bought all that to make sure we could do it. And then when we tried to set it up, it was really time consuming. I remember people getting really frustrated, even like moving your map view around.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. And the way it was pinned to the board was kind of non-intuitive and trying to figure out how to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. Did we? I don't think we stuck with it for 30 days, though, did we? Did you manage to get all that refunded?
Oh, yeah, I got it. I got it all refunded. I actually did it at the 30-day part. We went through it. I think this is back when we were running. We met every week, actually.
Okay.
So it was before we came onto the No Direction Network. So I think we actually got through one whole book. I think we got through one whole book with it, and then at that point, that was 30 days. So I canned it and I went over to Roll 20, which we've been using since. Now, what's your thinking about Roll 20 in comparison?
Well, I don't. I can try to think about it in a neutral way and an analytical way. But the problem with any consideration I have for a virtual tabletop is I consider all of them awful. In that, any of them are a poor substitute for being around a table with my friends. That said, I feel like Roll20 is sort of my personal comparison is Magic the Gathering. There we go. Roll20 is my Magic the Gathering. There are plenty of other, frankly, even way better collectible card games out there. But I know Magic the Gathering. It's comfortable for me. I know what the different kind of combos can be and what they can do. And so I'm never going to stray very far from Magic the Gathering, even if I might dabble occasionally in something that's, you know, more innovative or more fun, because it's just the thing that I know so well. And I've got some really good memories with it. And I feel like Roll20 is the same way. I know it. I've done, thanks to your pressure, I've done GMing on it for a couple different systems. So I feel like I kind of know it from the GM perspective. I know it from the player perspective. I know it well enough from the GM perspective that as a player, if my GM is struggling because they don't know something, I'll be like, oh, hey, your ribbon's going to have an image that looks like this at the top of it. We don't have that because we're players, but I know you do. And that's how you can solve this problem you've got. Oh, thanks, Ron. So it's comfortable.
Yeah, you know, I think that's my take on it as well. I mean, I've used it. I was looking at, I was playing with a group, and they said, oh, you've hit a special benchmark on your Roll20. I had 1,337 hours. So I was now
you're elite user.
Yeah. So I said, oh, okay. Yeah. Now I've since blown by that, but so it's like, yes, yeah, so I've used it for a bunch of hours and I know the basics on it. I've got shortcuts now, how to prep things. Somebody, one of our, the folks that oftentimes post on our Patreon, I don't know if he's one of our patrons or not, but I see him posting quite a bit in Starfinder groups. His name is Russell Sinclair. He actually put up a Starfinder API called Guidance on Roll20, which you can automatically take a stat block off of a PDF or off of the archives of Nethys, and it'll automatically populate that into a Roll20 character sheet.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
That's amazing.
You know, when I said I hadn't prepped this big battle that we're doing, you know, for this last thing. So I used that, and it took me not even like an hour to prep like all the floors, all the creatures, everything. That's something that would take me hours and hours to do before.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah. You know, so that's big bonuses there. So big props to him for that. And also, you know, I just saw a video on YouTube, you know, six tips for Roll20 that saved my life. I didn't know any of those tips. And so now I learned more things. Well, and this is after using it for a couple of years, you know.
See, that, and that's the fact that one of the advantages Roll20 has is the people who love it make it work. They're willing to put in the effort to make it work, and they're willing to share that. And so all of us reap the benefits. So Roll20's got a good community, I think.
Yeah, and there are some prepackaged scenarios and stuff in it and some APs that you can buy or that the community's put together and you can purchase, but it's nowhere near as exhaustive as Foundry Unity was. Not Fantasy Grounds Unity was. Now, but that said, for me, when I do society play, I run it from when I'm setting up APs. That's kind of my default. Because, like you say, I know it. I know how long it's going to take me to do. I know even if I have to clunk through something, I can make it work. I'm never worried I won't be able to do it on Roll20, because as a minimum, I could run it as like Google Slides, where basically here's a picture and we roll dice as I kind of talk about it, and we do theater of the mind for movement.
Yep.
So, you know, similar to how you run Torg. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty good on that. Now, I was really surprised when our next GM, who's taking over book six of our AP, which I think is Into the Crucible. Is that right?
Oh, that sounds right.
Yeah. I know there's Crucible in it.
I haven't looked at it on purpose. Yeah. I haven't looked at it. So
no, that's the same with me. In fact, I was just thinking, because we'll be wrapping up book five soon and be going into that one, book six. I actually need to look at where book six starts, so I can make a proper lead in from book five, Otherwise, it's going to be really weird that, okay, we just finished this, and all of a sudden we're starting somewhere and we had no idea. So,
well, the developer should have done that job for you, right? One of the things we developers do is we pay attention to transitions. And so I end up usually rewrite the conclusion of every adventure and the intro of the next adventure to mesh them together a little better.
All right. Well, I didn't, when I picked up this book from you, like the handoff there, I didn't see that really clear. I had to work on that a little bit. So I had to review how that one ended because I hadn't read it because you were running it, right, before. So I had to read that and then tie it into this book. And so I'll do a little bit just to read the front matter where it starts just to make sure. But like you, I don't like to read stuff that I haven't played. I want to be surprised, you know, when I'm going through it.
Exactly.
So, but anyway, I thought it was really interesting because the author of that book, Jason Tondreau, is going to be running for it. And I'm really excited about that. But when he said he didn't, you know, anything but Roll 20, it's like, wow, I didn't ask him why, but it's clear that he doesn't like the clunkiness of it. I thought originally when he said Fantasy Grounds Unity, it's because everything was already preloaded for him. And that's what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then you mentioned last time that Foundry would be okay as well, which is not all preloaded. So that kind of erased that thought. Do you have any sense for what might be his hang up or his hold up?
I don't. And I wonder whether it's just that Fantasy Ground. I mean, I don't have any experience with Foundry, and I'm frankly kind of excited to maybe take a peek around and see what Foundry's all about. But for all of its sort of kludginess, lack of user interface and resource hogginess, Fantasy Grounds it's way prettier than Roll 20. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just looks really slick, really neat. And I don't want to be speaking on Jason Tondra's behalf. I will instead speak on behalf of my good friend, Rhett, who I've known for years, who his GMing is, he's of the attitude that as long as you can make things kind of look slick and pretty for your players, it won't matter that you're maybe not as a skilled or prepared GM as they might like. It's got, a lot of the flash and razzle dazzle that'll get you through just about everything. And he's not wrong in a lot of cases. And I wonder whether or not there's something to the fact that the flash and razzle dazzle in Fantasy Grounds Unity is much higher, and maybe it's also higher in Foundry. I don't know. I want to poke around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not, Fantasy Grounds Unity has everything all integrated in. We just never, as a GM, I never quite figured out how to properly do that, all integrated in. Basically you could start, a combat situation, and if you brought the right thing up as a GM, everything there was open to you just by clicking on things. But it wasn't very good at explaining that. Now, I have used Foundry. I actually like it a lot.
Oh, really?
A lot. Yeah, I've only used it as a player, but I have another AP that I'm playing in, and then a bunch of society games. I have a local player, GM, only likes to run on Foundry, and I like it a lot. It's really nice. It seems like not to be a bandwidth hog. We have a couple players with very low power PCs, and my laptop that I play on all the time is 5 years old, so it's no spring chicken either, you know? So, we seem to be working fine running Discord and running this thing, and it's very intuitive. Plus, it's a community-driven system, so lots of players out there, folks in the community, have built in all these skills and modules and themes and stuff that you can then just basically drag and drop onto your character sheet. It automatically populates it with everything you need. You just push a button to make it happen.
Well, this sounds like it's got a lot of the benefits that Roll 20 has, right? That engage user community that makes everything easier for everybody. That's great to hear.
Yeah, so it has that, and it has a lot of the integration that Fantasy Ground Unity has. Now, I've never GM'd on it. Actually, over Black Friday, they had a special where you could buy their engine or contribute a certain amount to get their engine. And it's really, I don't know if you've ever set up like a Linux server or something like that. I don't know if you ever did.
Oh, I have not. No. I'm not. I'm mostly computer illiterate.
Yeah, so it reminds me a lot of that, where you have to know a lot of server-side things and make sure the ports are right and stuff like that. So that's kind of the setup. And so when I saw that, it's like, I'm sure I could go through a walkthrough and figure it all out. I don't really feel like that. So it's been sitting on my computer for a while now, but I play on it all the time. And when I have to build a character, you know, like I had to build a new character or something from scratch, and it took me like 10 minutes, you know, because it's so intuitive.
That's not so bad. That's actually a really big advantage. So,
So I'm really hoping that, that we decide we can go with Foundry, and that Jason's got that already loaded, knows how to use it, because I'm not going to be able to tell him how to do that.
Tell him how to use it. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I know a little bit from the player side, but not so much from the GM side, but it works really well. I really like that. Now there's a couple others out there. Astral is another free one. I know that Paizo has some support for. I've never used, cause it's only PF2 support and there's no Starfinder support on that yet. But these seem to be Roll20, Foundry, and Fantasy Grounds Unity are the main ones that I see players using a lot for Starfinder in particular. So
I think they're the ones that I see most for any kind of gaming. I know Roll20 tends to be more popular among 5th edition users. I've seen Pathfinder 2nd edition users get kind of frustrated with Roll20 and they're looking for something else. So maybe Astral's in a great space for that. But people who play 5th edition feel like Roll20 kind of caters to them a little better, meets their needs a little bit better. And so most of the 5th edition players I know that use Roll20 are very happy with Roll20. A number of the Pathfinder 2nd edition players that I know who use Roll20 are kind of keeping an eye out for something else.
Well, I think with 5th edition, you know, when I was trying to figure out initially with Roll20 how to bring in character sheets and stuff like that, they have a lot more integration with basically automated tools that, you know, a player could make his character up on a separate program and directly import into Roll20 just clicking a button. Like, there's no complex issue with that. I think with Hero Lab, you can do some of that with Fantasy Grounds Unity, with Foundry as well. I guess with Roll20, I have no idea. But that would be most. I know you can do stuff like that with 5th edition, because I was looking at things and I thought, man, this is so easy and cool. I wish I had this for building characters.
To be able to do this, yeah.
Yeah. So that makes more sense now, where they're a little bit more advanced for things. Now, you know, the other options are, and like we did this one time, I don't remember, like Rob, one of our players, when we were doing Dead Sons, was in Belgium or something like that. And Scott, basically, we just set up a laptop with a camera so he could see the screen. And we talked to him and he basically made his roles and just played remotely like that. You know, I mean, we could all do that, right? That'd be another way to do it. Just kind of zoom over a tabletop.
Yeah, I guess we could. And if somebody was taking control, and it'd be the GM, right? Was actually had, you know, the ability to either run a second camera or tilt their, pan their camera down to be able to see the tabletop to kind of give us a sense of what's where. That could work. I had a long-running Pathfinder 1st edition game where one of the players, he's very engaged, loved it, but he unfortunately had to travel a lot for work. And so he regularly dialed in from hotel rooms. And so we sometimes would have two people who would be dialing in. And we would set up a camera to keep an eye on the mat. And that way he'd be able to see, oh, I move over there by that big ogre looking guy. So that can totally work.
Yeah, you know, so that's another way. And then I actually know of several players that just use Google Slides. And basically talk through Discord, and, you know, for each map, they have a Google slide and players have tokens on them and players have control of their tokens. So it's pretty straightforward. You just use Discord and there's a die roller in Discord you can use as well.
So you can just, I'm going to attack and you, you know, type in something like roll 1d20 plus 17 or whatever and spits out what it is.
And that's a really, really low bandwidth way. And so, you know, I think worst case, like if we were to have a lot of problems, we could go something like that. And it's pretty straightforward to do as well.
Yeah, I guess it's not a bad idea either. I like to think that anybody who's listening to us is listening for how clever we are when we talk, not how mechanically brilliant our tactics in combat are, because who boy, will those people be disappointed if they're waiting for the ladder.
Yeah, no, in this case, it's more like yeah, you know, we have this problem. We're trying to figure out how to solve it, and we're going to talk through it on the air, you know?
Yep.
All right. Well, you know, I think it'll be really interesting switching over. You know, another issue with going to a new GM is you've played with him before, and Scott and Stephanie, have they played with him before?
Scott and Stephanie both have, yes.
Yeah.
He was in a in-person tour group that I was running at my house that I canceled when the pandemic hit. And he is very, very much into sort of the very cinematic, the kind of tropes, great with descriptions. He's just a really imaginative guy. I'm really looking forward to having him as a GM.
Wow. That's, I thought you were good at that. So if you're looking forward to him, I think it's going to be super awesome. I guess that's one of the things I was wondering. Cause like myself and Rob and Mark, you know, I've talked to him a little bit. I kind of know a little bit about him, but you know, none of us has played with him, much less had him as a GM. So, you know, I'm really kind of curious to see how that's going to go.
Yep. I think it's, now I haven't had him as a GM and, you know, but I can't help but think his skills as a player are really going to translate on the other side of the screen. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, the fact that, you know, he's Dr. Comics and knows so much about, you know, comic books and media and, you know, a lot of historical things, you know, just having talked to him about what his doctorate's about. It's like, man, he's got to have so much cool knowledge about stuff.
Yeah, he and Stephanie get along because both of them have been university level professors. So That's been good. You've got that in common as well. So I think the three of you in particular can go off on academia and leave the rest of us kind of wondering what's going on in the conversation if you want.
Yeah, but mine's a lot different. I mean, they're much more in the arts and stuff like that. And, you know, mine is much more kind of a professional thing. You know, I think when I talk to most people, they would never guess I have a PhD, to be honest.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Yeah. You're a very erudite fellow. I don't find it a surprise.
Yeah, and probably nobody realizes you're a lawyer too, right?
That's true. Yeah, we've got, you know, which one of John and Ron has got the PhD and which one's got the JD? And I think most people would say, what? I wouldn't think either of them had either of those.
Yeah. All right. Well, as I mentioned before offline, the weather is calling and I'm hoping to get out on the water. So I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.